Hello, everyone.
However you identify, you are welcome on our journey of broadcasting excellence,
where we chat a lot of bollocks for a couple of lads that don't have any.
Too true. Although it does take balls to tell a lot of the stories on here to the public.
It sure does, mate. Each week we discuss a topic tenuously linked to being trans, from coming out to dildos and dildon'ts to special guests.
I am Satch.
And I'm Leo, and this is our transmission.
Our series sponsors are The Agora, where life begins.
The Agora is a fertility treatment centre that helps all kinds of parents-to-be. It has the highest success rates in London and the South East.
They are partnering with brands like ours to develop their specialism of trans fertility treatment.
With over 2,000 babies born through this fabulous fertility facility.
Fabulous fertility facility.
It has an excellent team and exceptional care for both you and your baby-to-be.
So, without further ado, let's find out what we are on about this week. Action. Hello.
Action. Hello.
It is Satch and Leo's transmission. And we are here with our first transatlantic episode with the world famous Tristan Rees.
Well, that might be overstating it, but I'll take it.
All the way from Portland, Oregon, but actually who is Canadian, we've just found out.
It's true, especially now more than ever. I want to make sure that nobody mistakes me for an American, even though I am living in America.
Can't imagine why. cool. So, right, let's go straight in with these intros then. Sometimes these intros are wrong, so you have to correct us if they are, and then we fire all the people that have put these intros together, and that's Leo. So,
I am
fired from his own show.
I am the research team, and I've made a little bio, so do correct me if anything's wrong, because I do tend to make a lot of mistakes.
Should I read it, or do you want to read it today, Leo? You choose. You wrote it.
I'll read it. I'll give it a go.
Go ahead, mate. Shoot.
Right, here we go. Tristan Rees is a renowned keynote speaker talking about his experiences as a gay trans man and his lovely family, which consists of Biff, Riley, Haley, and Leo, not me. Another Leo. And
twist, I'm his son.
Yeah, I am. You are my father. He is most famously known for being the media dubbed pregnant man, which is a focal point in his speeches. He also has built up over a decade of experience for his speeches through his time working in the National LGBTQ Task Force, where he worked as an educator, trainer, and organizer. And he worked on numerous campaigns, namely the No on Proposition 8 campaign in California, where he used it to mobilize a volunteer infrastructure to help and support LGBTQ individuals' rights to get married. And alongside being a speaker, he now works as the founder and chief strategist of his own consulting firm.
Surely, strategist.
I would say strategist.
How would you say it, Tristan?
I would say strategist. I'm so sorry, but that's like the North American way. So do your own thing and I will not judge.
I think generally the rule of thumb over here is work out how Americans and Canadians say it. Say it the opposite of that and you're probably right.
There it is.
I defer to Leo's better judgment.
Strategist.
Yeah. And that's it. And we could say you're a very busy man with all that. What do you reckon to that intro?
Is that accurate? Do I need to fire him this week? Or
only a little. You only need to fire him a little.
Okay.
What did I get
wrong? It's the tiniest thing. It's because our eldest son, who's 12, changed his name recently.
Oh, wow.
Yeah, so he's not Riley anymore. He changed it to Lucas.
Oh, cool.
Wow, okay. What mate, they just wanted to change it.
Yeah, you know, it's so funny. I don't even think that he consciously knows why he chose to do it. He's given us a bunch of different explanations over time, but you know, we adopted him when he was 3 and he had a really, really rough start at his first family. And so we've kind of worked out that it's a little bit of him trying to create his own identity, be his own person, and kind of let go of some of the worst of what's happened to him and embrace whatever the best things are in his life, which are, I think, still yet to come. So,
Now you say it, I have an adopted cousin, and when we first met him, he was Billy, and he was Billy, and he changed it to Will and William because he wanted to have his own thing. So yeah, funny. That makes total sense.
Yeah. And initially we were like, sure, dude, but he really stuck with it. And so we were like, okay, well, us as queer parents can't be like, no, you're not allowed to change your name.
Yeah. Very good. Okay, cool. Right. Let's go straight in on these questions then. So Leo, are you going odds or evens today?
I'm going to go even. I'm going to let you, I'm going to let you take the odd
then
numbers.
I will take question one. You have such emotion in your speeches and you can tell you're feeling every word, which resonates enormously with the audience. A lot of this is about our ability to read, Tristan, you will realize. making your speeches all the more powerful yet thoroughly intimate. Does sharing your story ever get too hard because it's so personal?
Yeah, I mean, it's funny. It's like, I mean, that's my superpower, you know, is to be able to really access the full range of human emotions and to really be vulnerable. But you know, that means that I've had to do a lot of healing work. You know, it's dangerous to share stories that are too raw, and it's scary for the audience, you know? And so you have to really be able to speak from the scar and not the wound. And so in order to do the work effectively and be that open and vulnerable and authentic, I have to spend a lot of time working on myself to make sure that I'm not sharing anything that's sort of teetering on that edge of not in control. Yeah, it's been hard, but it's also really powerful and vulnerable. And I think one example is I was telling my story in front of like a huge, like an audience where there were three balconies of people. And so it's really scary, but also like I had a revelation about my own story in the moment, just from all that, just from all the energy that they were giving me and all their excitement and like wanting me to do well and wanting me to like be a happy person. Like I had a total shift. And going into that speech, even though the stakes were pretty high for me, just because there's a lot of people, I didn't know how I was going to end it. And I said, you know, I'm just going to trust them.
Wow.
They're going to carry me through. And they did. Just like in that moment, I had a revelation and I had healing happen in front of them. And I hope was powerful for them, but more importantly, it was really powerful for me. Because when you put your story out there in front of people who want you to do well and want you to be great and want you to be happy and love you, even if they've never met you before, but because of who they are, there's a real opportunity for healing and growth and connection. And that's been a real gift.
Well, first of all, you're talking to two people that definitely cried through your video. And for two people
that have
been on
emotional.
A lot of testosterone for a long time, crying was a bit of a like out of the blue thing.
I know, it's like getting bored out of a stone.
Secondly, when I'm not doing this, I'm a singer-songwriter. And I, what you were just talking about then, I was just thinking, I've had moments like that, like for sure. I'm finishing up a master's at the moment. And my project is, does sharing our stories help break down barriers? And you are the perfect example of that. And what you were just talking about, like, because it helps you break down barriers in yourself as well as with other people. Whoa. Yeah. Question one, and we're already right there, guys.
I mean, also everything I do is science. You know, like that's a big part of my background is the science of change. How do people change their minds about trans issues? How do they change their minds about LGBTQ issues? How do white people change their minds about race and racism and anti-blackness? It's all science. And so a lot of what I do is just rooted in evidence. And, you know, I think, Satch, you're going to be seeing a lot of that in your research around how do people actually change their minds. And one of the ways, not the way, but one of the ways is in the heart space, is by hearing somebody's story that you can relate to enough to see yourself in them and then be challenged enough to be forced to change your mind on something. And even if it's a little shift, it's still a critical shift. And that's how we make broad sweeping cultural change. And why I decided to tell my story publicly is because I wanted to do that on a massive scale, because the trans community, we need it. Like, we can't be dicking around anymore. We cannot be dicking around anymore.
We can't be dicking around.
People are dying. Like, I don't know what it's like in the UK, but like in the US, trans people are dying in the streets.
Do you know what?
I don't know whether it's to the same level as it is in the US, but I think that definitely happens here as well. I think we can
definitely
say that without a shadow of a doubt.
We just filmed another podcast with my sister, who is also a trans woman of color, and we were literally talking about her experience with like suicidal attempts and things like that. and how she got through it and how she's on the other side. So, you know, it's very real. It's not even something that you think of that you can't see. It's like it's happening. You know,
yeah, it's not a far away thing. It's like, yeah, on the door. And that's why when certain authors write certain things about it's not even happening, and but witchcraft and wizardry is, it makes you lose your mind a little bit.
Yeah,
but
we'll get onto that later.
You were excited to be called mate by a British person before the start of this. I need to make you my best mate now, because like I need to include your work in my research. That's what I've got to do. But that's, we digress. We're only on question one. Question two, Leo.
Question two, right. So in your time working for the LGBTQ task force, you mentioned you would follow cars of people trying to get signatures for ballot boxes, specifically for the No on Proposition 8 campaign. I just wondered if it ever got like heated with these people or others, like whilst working at the task force.
Yeah, I mean, a big part of what we did was resiliency work. Wow. And is figuring out how do you, as a queer person, as a person who's uniquely personally impacted by this work, how do you bounce back from people saying homophobic things, transphobic things, etc.? How do you find healing after doing that? And, I think there's two parts. One is people are so much more liberal one-on-one than you would ever imagine. And I mean, I've had hundreds, maybe thousands of one-on-one conversations on their doorstep in front of a grocery store, etc. And you'd be surprised how many people, and maybe this has changed now because now this information is so dated, 2008. But even then, you would knock on someone's door, they'd open the door and you'd say, hey, I'm here to talk to you about gay marriage. You're going to be voting on it in November. I'm someone where I do believe that people should be able to get married regardless of what their sex or gender is. And I'm wondering if you're willing to share with me, how do you plan on voting? And people would say, I just don't agree. I just don't see how two men should be able to get legally married. I worry about what that means for our culture and our society. And so people wouldn't usually come with something really awful. They would say, man, like, I don't get it at all. And for me, I'm like, that's awesome. That, like, I'm so ready to have that conversation with you,
Right.
And we really were. It was, like I mentioned already, it's all science. We have, like, here's our 5-step strategy. And it really involves asking people questions, learning about them, looking for the overlap between you and them. Where do you sync up? Where do you agree? And then telling your story through that lens. If they say family is just so important to me, I'm like, oh my God, like me too. Like, let me tell you about my relationship with my parents. Let me tell you about the way that my parents showed up for LGBT kids that were friends of mine who got kicked out of their house. And like, I want to give that kind of a loving, supportive space that my parents gave me and my friends to the next generation of people. And the best way I can do that is to be able to marry my partner. Can you understand how, by being able to marry the person that I love, I'm going to be able to serve community and be in the tradition of my parents? And I wonder if you can think about how that might impact you in a negative way. And it seems so basic, but like, straight people have never thought about that.
This came up on the podcast, on the recording we did earlier. It's just like how when people don't know gay people or, queer people, trans people, whatever, and then when they're kind of dehumanized in a way, they're figures on the news. And then when they meet people like us, like we went to Nashville last year, and nobody knew that we were trans. I don't think it even came into their minds to think that we were trans. And they just accepted us then and there because we were just humans on a level. But I think if they'd heard about a couple of trans kids doing a podcast in the UK, they'd be like spinning their guns and being like, it's just, to humanize.
Yeah.
To humanize.
And that face-to-face
LGBT
element
people.
To it.
Yeah.
Yeah, definitely.
So good. So good.
Very
good work,
insightful.
Tristan. Good work. Okay, question three. For many people that do not know a bit of your backstory, what was it that made you make the decision to be pregnant? Maybe for people that haven't seen your video.
Totally. My partner and I adopted these kids who were my partner's biological niece and nephew. They were my partner's sister's kids. And basically, like, we got a phone call. These toddlers that we knew, of course, they were our niece and nephew, weren't able to stay in their home because it wasn't safe for them right now. And no one else in the family was able to take them. So could they come and live with us for a little while? And so we basically became parents overnight in our mid-20s. We'd been together for 1 year
Wow. Okay. Throw a couple of kids into baptism the mix into fire. A relationship. Yeah. Exactly. That's how you know it's good.
Exactly. And of course we would not, we have no regrets and wouldn't do anything. I would do things differently, yeah. A lot of things differently, but we never regret taking them, of course. And we did want to grow our family at some point, and we wanted to have an experience of becoming parents, not at the expense of someone else losing their kids.
I feel you. Yeah.
You know, and to not have to do it where, I mean, we had investigators, social workers, judges, lawyers. I mean, there were so many systems involved that were not built for us. We had to hack them all the time. And it was terrifying not knowing is the next person that walks through our doors, is the next person that whose office we walked into, is the next judge we stand in front of going to look at us and say, they don't look like a family to me. I mean, a single single person, not based on our ability to love, care for, support these kids, but solely based upon who we are in the world, what we are in the world, could make that decision. Like, that was a terrifying experience. It was a traumatic experience that we're still all working as a family to heal from, and as individuals to heal from. What would it look like to build a family on our own terms, to grow our family on our own terms? And by then I had known dozens of transgender men who'd given birth to, you know, happy, beautiful babies. I knew it was possible. And so I kind of casually mentioned it to my partner, you know, who's a cis man, basically. And I sort of casually mentioned it, like, would you ever consider us having a baby? And my partner was like, hell no, that is so stupid. Why would we ever do that? That is ridiculous. No. But after a lot of conversations and a long time of thinking, finally sort of we both came around to the idea. And so that's how we decided to have a baby. We just wanted to DIY it with as little interventions from other people as possible. And it turned out the easiest, cheapest way to do that would be like inside of my own body. And so that's what we did.
That's totally understandable when, like, how you explain it all like that, how you just don't you don't want anybody else to have any say over that, you know, like, and how you guys just do it yourself. I don't know if this question comes up later on, but for me, when I heard your story, I was just like, whenever I've heard stories about trans men being pregnant, I've really struggled to, when I think of like that, putting myself in that situation, I struggle to get my head around that. I think, 'cause I think I would just find it too
dysphoric,
too feminine and too dysphoric. So just on a personal question, I just wanted to know whether that bothered you and if so, how you overcame that in your mind, because I just think it's so impressive that, like,
I mean, honestly, a lot of things come up for me. The reason I told my story publicly was for trans people. Like, my audience was non-trans people, was cis people, you know, they were my audience, but like, I did it for trans people to make it so that their lives would be easier, whether they choose to have a baby or not, but to be an example of a loving, supportive, fun, joyful person and family so that people's moms and grandmas and bosses could get rid of this idea that our lives are going to be miserable. And so because that's why I did it, that was my biggest fear, honestly, is that other trans guys, especially older trans guys, a generation before me that made my life possible, that they would come to me and be like, how dare you do this? Like, you're making it harder for people to understand us and support us. And actually, Satch, the opposite happened. Much more, I mean, almost exclusively what I got was kind of like what you think, which is like, wow, like, to be British, like, good on you, mate. Like, I could never do that, but it's so cool that you can. You know, it was the opposite of what I thought, you know, and I thought, oh my God, we are in such a different place as trans people than I thought we were, because that's an empowered place. Like, that's a healed place to be like, oh, I could never do that, but I'm not threatened by you doing it. And I actually think it's super cool that you can.
The last thing any of us should be doing is telling other people how to live their lives and what
how to be trans and what
that is comfortable with in their identity.
But that's not when I came out, like 15 years ago, that was not the attitude. It was like, look, you have to be trans in exactly this way. It's fragile. Our acceptance, the acceptance that other people have of us, is fragile, and it could break. So, like, please, God, don't break it. And so I'll say, like, that's the first piece. Is it was really wonderful to have older trans dudes like send me a DM or like, you know, see me at a conference or whatever, and be like, oh, it's so dope that you could do that. I never could. And so I think that's the first thing. I just want people to know that, like, it's not for everyone. Also, not all women get pregnant either. Not all women think that's great. You know, like,
I think because I preserved my fertility before going on testosterone, and it was without doubt the hardest thing I've ever had to do, having like, you know, female hormones and all that sort of stuff. So yeah, I guess there was the decision to do it, and then there's the pregnancy and the birth as well, like how you went through all that. This is not a phrase I ever thought I'd say, but it takes a really fucking strong man to give birth to a baby.
Yeah, definitely.
You know what I mean?
You asked about the dysphoria, and like, what's interesting is there's like my story and there's also the data. So, you know, like I'm a huge nerd. I love digging deep into like, what does the science say? What do we know? Not just what feels right, but what do we know? And there's a really fantastic study that looks at specifically dysphoria and experiences with medical providers for trans folks. And about a third of all trans people in the study that gave birth, about a third did have their dysphoria get worse. You know, it really was something.
Yeah.
And they associated pregnancy with femininity. They watched as their body sort of got bigger and softer and those kinds of things that they might view as more feminine. And it was really, really hard for them. So that's like a third of the experiences. And then about a third of people are what happened with me, which is like, it just kind of stays the same.
Right.
You just kind of have that same, that low level drumbeat or wherever they were before of dysphoria. And for me personally, it's like, I've known so many dudes who have given birth that the kind of the connection between pregnancy and femininity is just broken for me. It's just broken because I know so many badass dudes who've had babies.
Yeah.
I just don't see it that way. Yeah, sure. 99% of people who give birth are women, and like some super special men who are like, are able to can do that too. And so I think that helped. And then there's
that's a good way of looking at it.
And then the remaining third of people in that study, they actually found that their dysphoria got better or went away completely while they were pregnant.
Wow.
Yes.
Well, how did that work?
Yeah. When you look at the data and look at the interviews with those people, they really, what you hear almost universally is like, yeah, I never wanted a uterus and I always felt conflicted, confused, you know, dysphoric about it. And now it's being used to grow a person.
It's being utilized.
It's kind of like,
rather than just being a feminine thing that's there.
Yeah,
I see.
It's got a purpose now. So it kind of detracts from whether it's a feminine thing or a masculine thing.
And if they were like, oh, they didn't have top surgery and they like always hated having a chest. And then all of a sudden, like they're nourishing a human.
Right. So it's like next level. Yeah.
Yep. There's that like empowerment, reclaiming. Right. And then I think for me, like I can't speak for anyone else, but I am so glad I'm trans because I got to have the experience of like creating life, which is something that no other man can do. And that's pretty dope.
Yeah. You're one in a million, mate.
You got to be secure in your masculinity. That's for sure. For sure. Would you do it again? That's a good question. Sorry if I'm jumping into all your questions, Leo. I haven't looked at it.
Don't worry. I just spent hours researching and carefully putting these questions in order.
Fire me this week instead.
Yeah. go for it, mate.
Would you do it again, Tristan?
Well, that sounds like two questions to me. Is like, one, do I regret doing it? No. Two, would I ever get pregnant again? No.
Right.
Okay.
No. It was the coolest thing. I will never do it again.
Okay.
Right.
And that's totally fair enough.
Done it. Check the box. Have the baby. Close for business.
Okay,
Close for business.
Next question.
Right. Number four. Yeah. How was your experience coming out as... Oh, we're on three?
You're muted. We can't hear you, Tristan.
I think we're only on three. I talk so much.
It's great. We like to
We digress a lot, honestly. Yeah, this is all good. It's question four, yeah.
Yeah. How was your experience coming out as gay as well as being trans? It's like a double whammy.
Yeah, I mean, there really wasn't a second coming out as gay. I think when I realized I was trans, I knew I was a gay man. To be honest, like I've been identifying as a gay man since I was like 11 years old.
Right.
And that was the joke about me in high school, was that like I was a gay man trapped in a woman's body. Like that's what all my friends used to joke about me. And a lot of it's just stereotypes because like, I love musical theater and like, yes, I'm a theatrical person, but also like I was always attracted to like my first crushes were like men who turned out to be gay later on, or like male celebrities who like came out as gay.
Like that guy in NSYNC.
It just, It always, oh, Lance Bass.
Yeah, that's the one. Yeah.
All the people you could pick, but okay.
That's the only one I could think of, though. I thought, I mean, because we've got some weird celebrities that definitely won't have made it to Canada and America.
You know? well, this is also like in the 90s.
Right.
So, like, I'm old as hell. You have to remember that.
No, you're not.
And so, I can't, you know, when I mean, I did come out initially as bi when I was a teenager, only because, like, I looked at the queer community and I was like, yes, that, but you couldn't come out as trans when you were 15, you know, nobody, there was no language for me. And so I was just sort of like, well, I think that I'm bi. And my parents were like, okay, whatever, you know.
Where did you grow up?
I grew up in California, but in a very, very conservative rural area out right next to an Air Force base. So like very military, very conservative. Okay. But my parents were Canadian. And so they kind of exported their sort of Canadian, like kind of libertarian, kind of liberal, like hands-off approach to politics, identity, religion. Just like as an example, I remember being like maybe 10 and everyone in class that day had been talking about the church that they go to and their religion and stuff. And so I asked my mom when she picked me up from school, like, what church do we go to? And she's like, what are you talking about? We don't go to church. And I was like, well, what religion are we? And my mom was like, well, I don't know what you believe, but what I believe is none of your business. And so it's that. It's that Canadian way of just like, you find your own way. You don't pressure your kids.
You do you, we'll do us. Yeah. Okay.
Yeah.
Very cool.
Yeah,
very
totally. Cool. And so, you know, that's sort of the way I was raised. And so I came out to her and she wasn't totally surprised, but also didn't really care. And then it was, you know, maybe 5 or 6 years later that I came out as trans. And that was just a slow coming out process with my parents. Wow. I sort of like inched out and then they were weird about it. So then I like inched back in and then I tried again. And then I was taking testosterone. And then I just like always had a cold when they called me because my voice was dropping.
It's like, hello, mom.
That's how right. Just still got that cold.
Oh, I'm so sick.
Yeah. But there was no second coming out because I sort of inched out as bi when I was 15. And I was like, oh, I actually don't like girls. And so I just always liked boys the whole way through. So in a weird way, I kind of went from being a straight woman perceived by the world to being a gay man. So it's just a slightly different arc.
Kind of went hand
just
in hand.
Efficient. Yeah. More efficient, really.
I know. I came out like four times. Guy. So I wish I didn't have to, I wish I just did it in one quick thing and was just like, Well, not quick, but yeah.
Efficient. Okay, question 5. You mentioned in your speech that you became best friends with the puking emoji, as you would often get trolls chatting shit on your social media. What have you found is the most effective way of dealing with haters? For example, a certain writer of a certain book about witchcraft and wizardry and turfery.
Yeah, you know, I really try to stay in my lane. You know, I think I have a unique genius and I have a unique sphere of influence.
Right.
And so I just try to stay there. Like there are certain kinds of people that I can reach, that I can change their minds, that I can move them forward.
Yeah.
And there's a certain way that I do that. I can't reach everyone and I shouldn't try because that's going to make them actually more anti-trans and it's going to exhaust and harm me. And so I really just stay where I'm wanted and loved.
Yeah, it's like self-preservation sort of thing.
That's right. And so the thing with JK is like, I can't change her mind and I don't have anything important to add to that conversation. So like, I disagree with her on trans issues, but it can't go any further than that. Like I can't let her hook me emotionally because it's a waste of time. It's a waste of energy. And all the energy that I might spend railing against her on Twitter, which she will never see, and only serves to further give her a platform and drive her into the arms of transphobic people.
Yeah.
The more time I spend doing that, that's time I don't spend talking to like awesome trans people like you about fertility stuff. That's time I don't spend doing a TED Talk or a Moth Story Hour or talking to doctors about trans fertility or doing anti-racism work with white people. Like that's my genius. That's my sphere of influence. I just stay there. And so with the hater stuff, you know, super practically, I don't get emotionally hooked by them. I just detangle myself. And then like, I just call in the cavalry. You know, when those things happen, I just call in allies and I'm like, yeah, I'm just going to like turn over my social media to you for the next 3 days. I just need you to delete and block people. And that's so I have other people handle it for me. And I don't do comment sections at all, ever. Not on other people's articles, not on the things I write. I'm Johnny Appleseed. I plant the seed. I keep moving. And I trust that the people in my life that I love and have a mutually accountable relationship, they will come to me separately and tell me if something I wrote was problematic. You know, I can't read that in the comments. They'll come to me and they'll say in a kind, loving way, by the way, you used a word in your last post that didn't work for a lot of people. You may want to think about that. Okay, cool. You know, because you need the information. There's a lot of good information to grow. Yeah. That's right. But I can't, I'm too tender. You know, you talked about being able to be open and vulnerable. It's a catch 22 because it's my superpower. And also like it's the Pandora's box for me.
Right.
I'm so open that people can really see me, but being that open means that people can really get inside.
Wow.
So I have to set up those kinds of guards to keep people from getting in because it really, 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 really hurts. It really impacts me. And it touches on those deep seated beliefs that I still have even all these years later, that I'm not worthy of being loved, that I am a monster or whatever the worst things they say about me are. You know, I think that's part of the trans psyche.
Can't relate.
We definitely got emotionally hooked on the JK Rowling thing for sure. Mm. We did an episode on it and I read her essay just before we recorded the episode. And as you can tell, we're just lighthearted jokers most of the time chatting, but I was raging.
I was trying to do a lot of Harry Potter puns to try and kind of bring you out of
it. And I was just like, So I need to learn some of those strategies.
I just don't want to give her that power. I just don't want to give her that power to get that deep inside of me.
Yeah.
And I also, as much as I, because of the work that I do, I really do want to try and understand, maybe not empathize or relate, but I want to understand, like, where does this come from and I know in the UK you have a lot of women, you know, who are transphobic. So like, what is it about the way that they've been harmed as women? What is it about structural sexism that has created in them a fragility around their identity as women? So fragile that it can be broken by the mere existence of a trans person.
Yeah.
A trans woman. Like that's like how fucking hard, to wander the world so fragile that the mere existence of a trans person can shatter your sense of self and safety.
Yeah, definitely.
Where does that come from? And how can we be in that conversation? You know, how can, instead of letting people hurt us, say, I'm so fucking sorry for whatever has happened to you.
Yeah.
That this is how you view the world. And you're not allowed to hurt other people. Of course not. And when you get to that place, then you're able to find other women who aren't there yet and relate to them and invite them into a conversation. So you're able to say, like, I can totally understand how you may be afraid that people are encroaching upon your fragile territory. That sounds really, really scary. And I'm really, really sorry. Tell me more about what that feels like for you. And have that conversation at that deeper place.
Yeah.
Because when you can help someone feel seen and heard and help bring them healing, then you can say, I hope you can understand that a transgender woman is no threat to you. And I'm so sorry that it's felt that way to you.
Yeah. You've got like a really empathetic approach, which is just the most beautiful thing, I think.
I just want to be effective. Like, I just want to end transphobia. That's it. And so I want to learn everything I can about how to get us there.
Right.
And then do that work.
Sure.
Well, we're right there with you. Go team.
And not everyone should do that. Like, not everyone should and can do that. And so I'm not saying my way is the right way. It's just a way. And I think as a transgender man, that's also how I try to be an allyship with transgender women. Like, they can have whatever response they want to things like this. But like, I feel like since she's coming for trans women, I can't get hooked. That's their job. I have to be effective. Like, I have to do the work to change some people's minds so that not everyone gets sucked into her way of thinking. Mm-hmm. So that trans women don't have to bear that burden, because it's going to tap into their own wounds, their own trauma. And that's going to, it's, you know, they shouldn't be expected to bear the brunt
especially
of that education.
Work. Yeah. Especially when it's for somebody that was so loved, you know, like she is, and so celebrated in the UK. Yeah, she's, you know, huge.
Here too.
Yeah,
like what Misfit didn't feel like they were a part of Dumbledore's army.
Yeah.
You know, it really is a deep betrayal for so many of us.
Yeah.
Okay. Question
six.
Six from me? Six from you.
Six from me. I'm on the evens.
Your even numbers today, yeah.
Cool. So what's your favorite thing about parenthood?
Oh my God. This morning, Leo, who like he usually wakes up at around 5 a.m. and then comes upstairs and just like crawls into bed with us. And this morning, as I was waking up, Leo sat up. And his first words were, "I love you, Daddy."
Oh,
Leo.
His first fucking words. Like, he just looked at me and he was like, "I love you, Daddy." And I was like, oh. Are you kidding me? Like, yes. I'm so mad at you for waking me up at 6 a.m. And it's those tiny moments of unconditional, pure tenderness, connection, love that... You just that just like pure sweetness that I can have with my kids. They're a little fewer and far but further between with the older kids. Yeah. Even then, you know, like my daughter and I went to the park yesterday. We didn't play on the playground, but we just went to the park and hung out and walked around. And on the way home, she just like grabbed my hand in the car and was like, "That was really fun."
Oh, bless her.
You know, it's just that part for me. Like that's yeah. the absolute like best. They don't want anything from you. They don't yeah. expect anything in return. It's just a giving and a receiving of connection and love and support. And so that's my favorite part.
That sounds yes. amazing.
Good answer. Yeah. I'm all warm and fuzzy
I know.
Now.
Same. Oh.
All right. Question 7. What do you think are some of the biggest issues that trans people are having to face in America today? And what can we do to help?
I know people listening can't see, but I'm just shaking my head. I mean, there is no biggest issue. There's just fires everywhere. There's just fires and like what people feel called to do, you know? And I think the thing with transphobia is it shows up everywhere. You know, it does. It shows up in homes. It shows up in schools. It shows up in policing. It shows up in violence. It shows up in economics and jobs. So I think wherever people feel called to up their game and to show up for trans people, like that's the right place because we need it everywhere. Like we need yeah. allies in homes talking to their kids about trans people. We need bosses hiring trans people. We need colleges providing gender inclusive classrooms so trans people don't yeah. get pushed out.
Yeah.
We need people doing culture change. We need more trans characters on TV. We need partners of trans people. We need men. We need straight men in relationships with trans women to come yeah. out and speak publicly about their love and their lives. You know, we yeah. just need bold, courageous, authentic, humble action everywhere. And so there really isn't a biggest issue. I mean, people are being killed in the streets. That's a huge issue, but yeah. I don't think we know how to fix that. We just don't, like the data just isn't there. We're sort of like, yeah, if people were more economically safe, if they had jobs, if they had safe places to go, maybe they wouldn't be in these difficult, dangerous situations as much. But, you know, we don't really know exactly what we can do. And so I think we just have to keep doing all the things.
Yeah.
All of the
yeah,
things.
It's yeah. not ever all just going to be things. Pinpointed. It's just a lot of everything at once kind of thing.
I feel like I'm going to like trans church today and I'm just getting like a really great sermon. I'm all like having some spiritual moment with Tristan. Tristan for president. What?
Yeah. Yes, okay. I vote. Well, I wouldn't.
No, thank you.
I don't have a...
No, thanks.
Yeah, okay, well, that dream died out very soon.
You can't vote because you're not American, no. And he can't be president because he's not Canadian.
Well,
he's Canadian.
I'm a naturalized citizen, so I am able to vote, but I cannot run for president, thank God. So
right. Okay, well, we'll vote for you anyway. Don't worry about it, it's fine. Question eight.
So have you ever experienced any negativity? I guess we answered this sooner.
We touched on yeah, this. Yeah,
the question was, have you ever experienced any negativity within your own trans community, i.e. trans men who try and refute your male identity?
Yeah, I mean, we did touch on this. It was just so, so, so surprising and wonderful because the thing that gets... the thing that really hurts me the most is when trans people come for me.
Yeah.
And I'm sort of like, because in my mind, I feel that we're all spiritually connected.
Yeah.
You know, I feel connected to every trans person that has ever been and every trans person that will ever be. Someone coming for me should feel like an intervention, like a family intervention. You know, someone calling me on the damn phone or sending me a DM and saying, "Hey, can we chat?" And then saying to me, "Hey, so you did or said something that didn't work for me." It's like, and I'm you know, I think that every person that I've ever worked with can tell you, like, I'm so excited for that conversation because I want to do better. I want to be my best self. I want to show up for people. I want to continue to be relevant. You know, that's why I do a lot of work with high schoolers and queer college students, because I want to know how they're thinking about things, because I want to remain relevant for them.
Right.
And so that's it is extremely hard when someone like puts me on blast on social media, because I'm like, fool, you could just tell me and I'll change and I'll learn and I'll grow. That's
it. Yeah, it's not.
You know, you don't need to come from a disempowered place. You are empowered by me to talk to me. And it's also not effective. You know, again, if the goal is to end transphobia, the most effective way to do that is to talk with people one-on-one to understand them and to call them into a greater place of integrity. And I think by being accountable to the community over so many years, I think people know now that they can just come to me and be like, bro, you got to use a different word. And I'm like, oh my God, thank you so much for telling me. That was so stupid. I'm going to fix that. Yeah. And then it's done.
Yeah.
We say on this podcast all the time, we are shit trans people, because we don't know. We're just people that happen to be trans. We don't know all the answers to everything. We're just trying our best. But I will never understand this. We were talking about it in reference to TERFs and sort of feminists that were anti-trans women. I will never understand how people that have been through discrimination can attack other people that have been through discrimination. It's only when all the minorities come together and say, no, this is not okay, to the powers that be, that's going to be eradicated. Like, why would we ever come for each other and not show up for each other? That's just insane to me.
I know. And no matter how much I disagree with another trans person, like, you will never hear me publicly denounce another trans person, period. And I may say, like, I disagree with Caitlyn Jenner's politics, but I'm never going to call her a shit trans person. Like, I just wouldn't do that. Like, we're all connected. Yeah. And you never know, like, I may be on a phone call with Caitlyn Jenner at some point, and I may have a chance to call her into her higher integrity and to invite her to be part of a more intersectional movement for trans rights. Mm-hmm. And I can't do that. That power is gone from me if I blasted her on Twitter or whatever. And so it's hard. We push each other's buttons. We're traumatized people. We're hurt people. You know, a very well-known gay activist here in the U.S. once said that, like, you know, dating other queer people is like dating war vets. Like, we've all been wounded. We've all been hurt. And just as if you're dating someone who is in a war, you have to know that they have PTSD. Like, you're going to tap into things and they're going to, like, have an overreaction. You have to be prepared for that. But, like, you also have to understand you also have been wounded, and you have to know your own work and do your own healing.
Yeah, but I love what you keep saying about calling people to their higher integrity. And even when people go low or whatever, you staying high and just...
Yeah.
And just, yeah.
That's a and really I'm not cool perfect. Like, I was just thinking, like, maybe 6 months ago, I referenced a trans guy who's a little older than me who had written... He had created F2M magazine, like, in the 90s. And he and I are really good friends, Rocco. And he was like he was the first, I think, well-known trans rappers. He was Catastrophe with a K. When I first came out as trans. And so he was like one of my heroes, and then we become buddies. And, you know, I posted that I was so excited he'd published this book. You know, I really try to lift up other trans people. And someone, you know, went into my DMs and was like, oh, I just wish that, like, F2M magazine was, like, more non-binary inclusive. Like, it's so focused on the masculine thing. And you know, I really went off on that poor person. And I think they were trying to call me in with love, but it tapped into this deep wound that I have about never being enough for other trans people.
Right.
Like, never being enough. They're always like, cool that you did this, but you should have done that.
Yeah, I get what you mean.
You know, it's always this, like, the, like, gloved hand with the spikes inside it, you know? And that's been, like, my whole life is trans people being terrified of another trans person stepping into power and pulling you down. And even though that's happening less and less now, it just tapped in so hard. Like, it just hurt me so much to be trying to lift up someone who was doing work before this fucking kid was born.
And
someone's still coming for them.
Yeah.
You know, and not just saying, like, it's so dope that they did that. I want to do something like that for non-binary.
Yeah, that's
people.
The approach they should have.
Like, why can't you do that? You know?
Yeah.
Just putting out positivity rather than negativity.
Yeah. And we can't all do all the things for all the people. You know?
All the time.
Yeah. We just can't. And I feel so bad. So, like, I'm not perfect either. Like, I definitely should have, and I learned from that too. That's, you know, that's the next level shit, you know, is when you make a mistake and you're like, oops, shouldn't have done that. Where is that wound? How can I heal and how can I learn?
Yeah.
And so I'm super embarrassed. Like, I'm a shit trans person too. We all are. You know, that's part of the, that's part of the humility. That's the humility. That's where you want to be, is to just like learn and grow. And so like, I'm 100% not perfect. And I feel so bad for going off on that poor person who's just a person trying to do their thing too, you know, but I was just so mad.
No,
we're all human.
No, it's
mate.
Fine. Yeah, I say things all the time, and I'm like, oh, I need to.
Shouldn't have said that.
Yeah.
In the end, if you worried about what, you would never say anything. Do you know? We would have to live in silence because we're always gonna say something wrong. We're always gonna upset someone. The best thing we can do is just be ourselves and just try and, yeah.
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 Grow. Yeah. Growth.
Right. Growth. Everyone's growing. Okay. Question nine.
Go ahead.
What's your top tips for parents to be?
I mean, especially for queer and trans folks, you know, I really encourage people to hold tightly to your vision of becoming a parent one day, but hold lightly to how you get there. Because there are so many variables, you know, there are so many things. What if Satch, you preserved your eggs and then there's a catastrophe at the cryopreservation place, as there was a couple years ago here in the US, and your eggs are gone. Mm-hmm. It's like, that doesn't mean you're not going to be a parent one day. Or if it's just, you know, if a trans woman has been on estrogen and they go off estrogen, try to do fertility preservation, their fertility never comes back. They may feel gutted, but like, kids will find their way into your life. Like, that's one thing I've learned over and over and over again. There's no one right way to become a parent. There's no one right way to be a parent. And so it really is to just have that vision of being a family and then let life reveal itself to you.
Right.
Because to get into sort of the spiritual realm, I feel like when you open the door to becoming a parent, you know, the spirits that need to be in your life that are going to teach you and that you're going to teach, they will find their way to you. It's just your job to be open to receiving them when it comes along.
That's a really cool way to look at it.
Yeah, definitely. Yeah. It's like not about the steps in between sort of thing.
Side question again. How did you sort of educate your kids in terms of you being trans? Did you just, elaborate. Save me trying to articulate that question perfectly. You know what I mean?
Yeah, I mean, what the data tells us is the worst thing you can do for a kid is to keep something a secret and then tell them later on.
Wow.
The best thing for a kid is that you just are open about all the parts of their conception and their story and your story in developmentally appropriate ways as they grow up. And so you proactively try to find ways to tell them things, and then you reactively respond to their questions when they ask. And so our kids, when they came to us, you know, there was never a sitting them down and being like, we have something to tell you, daddy's trans. It was just always like, oh, well, we can't go in the men's changing room because, you know, I'm transgender. And so I'm not comfortable with other men seeing my body naked. So we're going to use the family changing room. And they're like, okay.
Instead of making a big thing of it.
Yeah, that's right.
Kids are so often better than adults anyway.
Oh, they don't care.
Like stuff like that.
No, yeah, no, and you're just like, oh yeah, so some boys like you have these parts. Some boys like me have other parts. You know, just those little ways, or even like, I was asked to contribute a photo of me being pregnant to like an inclusive kids board book for little kids. And so they sent us that book in appreciation for me, my photo being used. And that's one of my 3-year-old's favorite books. Aww. And so that's one way, because there's a picture of me pregnant in it. And so he'll say like, oh, there's daddy. And I'm like, yep. And he's like, and there's me in your tummy. And I'm like, yep. And so there's just those little ways that you get to just, it's just a normal part of anything that you would say
really
to a
natural
kid.
Thing.
Yeah, definitely. Awesome. Wow.
Okay. We've got to the final question. Tristan. We've done it. Go on, Leo.
Right, so you obviously gave your son Leo one of the best names in the world. So would you ever consider having another son and naming him Satch, the second best name in the world?
Can I just preempt this with, so Leo writes these questions in every single episode. Question 10 is always slightly ridiculous like that. And we had a pastor on before, we had a vicar on, and I had to ask him if vicar role play was okay. They just get crazier and crazier. So But yeah, you know, if you want to have another surname named Satch, I'm all for you doing that. My real name's Joshua. You could do that as well if you like. I think it's pretty unfair that you have a Leo and not a Satch.
It is. It's ridiculous, and I apologize for that. If I have another son, I will name him Satch or Joshua. There you go. Since I'm never going to have another kid, right. There you go.
A verbal agreement there.
We've got this video contract. This has been so good. It's been so fun and nice to meet you.
Yeah,
and you've been super educational. Yeah. Actually, we'll have to do this again sometime. That'd be really cool.
You are very insightful.
You are very insightful, yeah. And it's our first transatlantic episode. Is there anything you want to promote? Is there anything you want to... Where can people find you online?
Yeah, I mean, so my partner's name is Biff. And so online, we are Biff and I, B-I-F-F-A-N-D-I. So if to look at pictures of my little Leo... his little cheeks. He looks just like Biff and almost nothing like me. And I'm like, this is unfair. Biff did like literally...
I went through all that and that kid doesn't look anything like
that. Yep. Just got my ears sticking out. And I'm like, really, dude? That's really the thing that I got made fun of for all those years in school? That's what you're going to... That's the trait you're going to take on? Okay. I mean, like blonde hair, blue eyes. I have black hair and, brown, green eyes. I'm just like, why? But if you see pictures of him and the other kids, they can, you know, folks can find me on Facebook, on Instagram as Biff and I. And then I do all my trans inclusion work through my consulting firm, which is Collaborate Consulting. And I just launched my passion project, which is transfertility.co. And that's a whole website just dedicated to articles, research, training, and soon a whole video library on transfertility.
Amazing. Definitely going to check that out.
And are you doing some sort of work with the Agora? Because that's how we got introduced to you through the Agora, who is our sponsor for this podcast. So,
that's right. Yeah. Cool. I got connected to them because I do a lot of media consulting on storytelling, how to tell trans stories responsibly, ethically, and so that it's good TV in a compelling way.
Right.
So yeah, I'm working on a project in the UK around trans pregnancy. Ooh. And so that's how I got connected.
You should come and visit.
So where are you coming to the UK?
I mean, I was supposed to. I was already supposed to be in the UK in April. But obviously the pandemic has happened and now no one's letting anyone from the US anywhere because we're all idiots. So I don't know.
Well, when you do come over, give us a shout because we'd love to take you for a beer.
I would love that.
And
a pint.
Did you say a pint?
Yes, a pint. You're so
you're basically British. Everything. And fish and chips.
You're basically British, yeah.
You've got to have fish and chips.
Yeah, fish and chips too.
I love fish and chips. Sounds
disgusting.
And then if we're ever in Portland.
Yeah, so we'd love to hang out. I'll take you to see some waterfalls.
Ooh.
Amazing.
I love a waterfall.
Ooh, I love a waterfall.
I know, me too.
We're basically TLC.
That's right.
Waterfalls.
Don't go.
Yeah.
No. We can't sing it.
We're going to have to. Oh, that's good. That's good.
There we go.
All right. Thank you all so much.
Yeah. See you later.
Over and out.